Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
WNYC.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and I'm continually amazed at how people who don't even know you feel free to tell you what you should be doing. So, it's been cold here in the last few days, right? Really cold. But in the morning, I've been doing my usual thing. I leave the gym, wearing my gym shorts, and walk the one block to the pool where I swim. I've got a coat on, but people see the shorts and they're like, "Aren't you cold? That doesn't look warm enough. Get off the radio, Schaefer!" Actually, that last one seemed a little random and off-topic, I thought. The funniest comment was when I was walking past a mom pulling her maybe 5-year-old daughter down the street in the icy wind, and I heard the little girl say, "But that man's wearing shorts." I didn't wait to hear the mom's reply, but I'd love to know what the rest of that argument was about. Anyway, my point is, be careful when dispensing free advice, he advised freely, because free advice is usually worth exactly what you pay for it. Like when Miles Davis did his masterpiece album Kind of Blue, people kept wanting and expecting him to keep going in that vein. But Miles didn't want to keep going in the same vein. He wanted to walk around in the cold in his shorts. So he made the groundbreaking electric album Bitches Brew. And 40 years later, the debate still rages about the relative merits of those two Miles Davis albums. That's a debate that we will revisit later on Soundcheck. Another example of people thinking they know what's best for you. The Cuban pianist Omar Sosa has been soaking up the music of Miles Davis and Thelonious Monk and Bill Evans for the past decade or so. And the big jazz festival in Barcelona thought it would be a great idea to ask Omar to do a tribute record to Miles Davis's Kind of Blue. They thought it would help his career. Omar's response?
In the beginning, I say, well, do you want to help me or do you want to kill me?
Fortunately, the project didn't kill him, and Omar Sosa found a way to create an original work as a tribute to Miles, and he'll play some of it for us later. But first, someone else thinks they know what we need.
Get you some of this, slow down fast. I'll take you up and down. These hollers and heels, let me show you.
When this Randy Houser song hit the airwaves here in New York on Monday, country music returned to our city's radio dial for the first time in 17 years. The station calls itself Nash 94.7, and for the moment, it's a work in progress as the station's owner, Cumulus Media, assembles an on-air staff and programmers. Here to tell us about the return of country music to New York radio is David Hinckley, TV and radio writer of the New York Daily News. David, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your invitation.
David, you know it's a very, very crowded radio market here in New York. Everybody's angling to, you know, get ears and attention and listeners and sponsors. How big a deal is the return of country to the New York radio scene?
Well, it's a very big deal to country fans, who, of course, have had the drought for 17 years, and an even bigger deal to the country music industry, I'm thinking.
So you think folks in Nashville have been looking at New York and saying, you know, there's a huge wasteland there, millions of people not hearing what we're putting out?
I think they're probably saying that to some extent. I think even more they're saying there's a whole crop of media buyers and advertisers who are not hearing country music, so it's not on their screen when they're thinking of their buys.
What had the station been before Monday?
It was owned by Harold Camping's Family Radio. He used it to promote the fact the world was going to end last year. And when the world didn't end, he ended up selling a bunch of his radio stations, including this one.
So why now, though? I mean, why is the time right for country music to return to New York?
I think there's probably some sense that with Taylor Swift and Carrie Underwood and Jason Aldean, the TV show Nashville, the fact that there's now a country judge on American Idol and on The Voice, suggests may have suggested to some people that the country was more mainstream, perhaps, than it's been in the past. But that's kind of been cumulative for a while. I don't think there was one thing at this particular point that said, ah, country music.
Right. But there was the opportunity because this guy was selling the station.
Yes. It's very rare, in particularly recently, that you find a strong FM signal in New York for sale, and Cumulus jumped on the opportunity to buy it.
And they started on Monday with what is essentially a kind of country music jukebox of kind of popular country music coming from Nashville. We heard a little bit of that Randy Houser song, How Country Feels, which is new. The second song that they played was this aptly named number from Alan Jackson called She's Gone Country.
She's been playing at a room on a strip for 10 years in Vegas. Every night she looks in the mirror and she only ages. She's been reading about Nashville and all the records that everybody's buying. Says I'm a simple girl myself, grew up on Long Island. So she packs her bags to try her hand, says this might be my last chance. She's gone country. Look at them boots. She's gone country.
Alan Jackson with She's Gone Country. And maybe you noticed the line where the singer says, I'm a simple girl. I come from Long Island, which certainly Alan Jackson wrote this song well before Monday when Long Island and New York and Westchester and northern New Jersey, the whole metropolitan area, finally got a country radio station again for the first time in 17 years. We're speaking with David Hinckley, the TV and radio writer of the New York Daily News. And the idea of country radio in New York, I mean, in the past, we have had, you know, going way back, WHN, there was a WKHK, then there was WYNY, so all of these stations did pretty well, didn't they?
They did. Country has always been a successful format in New York. The problem is I heard in 1996 when Jimmy DeCastro, who's a famous radio executive, switched WYNY from country to WKTU, the dance station. He said, I could keep this station country and make $10 million, and quietly make $10 million a year. The problem was the quietly. He wanted a station that made some noise.
Mm-hmm. One of the ironies here, David, is that at a time when the record industry is having real problems selling records, which is something that radio has always helped the industry to do, country music, you know, 5 of the top 10 best-selling albums on the Billboard charts last year were country records. I mean, it seems like it was just an opportunity that was just lying there waiting for 17 years for someone to pick it up.
Absolutely. Country fans buy music, in contrast to fans of some other genres. Even in New York, more country music is sold in New York than is sold in Nashville, which has a lot to do with the fact New York is bigger than Nashville.
Right.
But still, it indicates there's a substantial base of country fans here. So it makes a lot of sense in terms of marketing, and the country music industry just couldn't be happier that they have a showcase like this in New York finally.
What about demographics? Is the country audience largely male, female? How does that play out?
The traditional thinking and what was borne out by the previous country stations in New York is that it's soccer moms, the same people who like WPLJ, that adult contemporary rock pop music, like country music too.
Hmm.
So the thinking is that, you know, you've got a lot of listeners on Long Island and Westchester and New Jersey. So I think the target is women and fairly younger women as opposed to women over 65. So it's a very promising market in terms of reaching people with music that advertisers also want to reach.
We're speaking with David Hinckley. He's the TV and radio writer for the New York Daily News about this new country music radio station. It's the first one in New York City in 17 years. It's calling itself Nash 94.7. It's owned by Cumulus, which is the second biggest owner of radio stations in America after Clear Channel. And Cumulus is saying, David, that 94.7 will be part of a nationwide Nash FM brand, but that this will be, quote, a New York station tailored for the New York listener, unquote. Does that go to what you were saying about how this might be targeted more towards women, or what do you read into that?
Wishful thinking. New York is sort of a cornerstone for what they'd like to have as a national network of Nash radio stations. I suspect, and I don't have any inside information on this, mm-hmm. I suspect that the Nash in New York will sound a lot like Nash in Tulsa or, you know, Rapid City or other places where it is around the country, which would be too bad if they don't tailor it a bit for New York, because the successful country stations in New York in the past, notably WHN, have had a very specific New York sound. They play a little country rock, they play some New York country, they play some, which sounds a little different than you know, Birmingham country.
Yeah.
And it was very successful for those reasons. And you also had very local New York personalities. But I'd be surprised if Nash had very specific local New York personalities, or if the music were tailored very much to New York.
All right. Well, it's on the air as of this past Monday, Nash 94.7, the return of country music to New York City's radio dial for the first time in 17 years. And we've been talking about it with David Hinckley, the TV and radio writer for the New York Daily News. David, nice to talk to you again. Thanks very much.
My pleasure was mine. Thank you.
This is Soundcheck. Okay, folks, time for a Soundcheck challenge. We're working on an upcoming segment, and we want to hear from you. How can New York's new country music radio station sound like New York? What artists and songs should it play? What country genres should we hear on it? You can leave us a message at 1-866-939-1612 or send us an email, soundcheck@wnyc.org. That's 1-866-939-1612. Sound off about what you think New York's country music should sound like. And then...
I'm Russell Bell, I ain't a soldier, I'm a mastermind, flashing in the flashiest fashions at the master's box.
Come to our next taping of Soundcheck. It's this Thursday, January 31st at 2 p.m. and features the chef Eddie Wong of the East Village restaurant Bauhaus. He is a serious hip-hop fan, and his friend Heems, the Queens rapper from the late great hip-hop crew Das Racist, will perform live for us. Both of them will be joining me in the green space. I hope you will, too, this Thursday at 2. For tickets, go to wnyc.org/thegreenspace. Up next, pianist Omar Sosa pays tribute to perhaps the greatest jazz album of all, Kinda Blue by Miles Davis. And later, we debate the legacy of Kinda Blue by measuring it against another great Miles Davis record, Bitches Brew, in one of our Soundcheck Smackdown debates. That's coming up later. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. On his latest album, the Grammy-nominated composer and pianist Omar Sosa pays tribute to Miles Davis's 1959 masterpiece Kind of Blue, and he does it without including a single song from the original. Instead, Omar's album, called Egun, is a tribute to the spirit of Miles Davis. We'll find out more about the project in a moment, but first, let's hear a song. Here is Omar Sosa, back in our Soundcheck studio, with a piece called Calling Egun. Thank you. That is Omar Sosa at our Steinway here in the Soundcheck studio in a piece called Calling Egun. That's E-G-G-U-N. The album is entitled Egun by Omar Sosa and the Afroelectric Experience. But Omar here solo with us, as he has done pretty much annually. Good to see you again.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you. It's always a pleasure to be here, John.
So that's kind of an invocation, that piece.
Yeah, this is the idea. Well, Egun means ancestors.
It's a Yoruba word.
Yeah, Yoruba word, yeah.
And it means sisters?
You know, ancestors.
Oh, ancestors. Okay.
And then for me, this is really important, especially in the record, because it's the last song of the record. Of course, what I did here was a little kind of solo variation of what happened.
So the ancestors, the Egun, they're not just ancestors. In many African traditions, the Yoruba one included, yeah, they act as kind of spiritual guides.
Yes, yeah. Let's put it that way. Yeah, Miles Davis is ancestors. Mm-hmm. Thelonious Monk is ancestors. Bill Evans is ancestor. And I try to say thank you with this piece to all of these masters. It give us the opportunity to play the music that we play today.
Yeah. Now, growing up in Cuba, Omar, you would have had access to a lot of Yoruba culture, yeah, Afro-Cuban drumming and stuff. You wouldn't have had so much access to Miles Davis and Thelonious Monk and Bill Evans.
I discovered Monk in Germany.
In Germany,
yeah,
okay.
A friend of mine, a saxophone player, I remembered. Yeah, we finished a tour, in 1999. He told me, okay, you can come to my house. And he put me a record of Monk. I started crying like if somebody called me. Like, I said, okay, I like this music. This is what I want to do.
So what had you been playing up until that point?
Well, I mostly the time like a Cuban traditional music, a son montuno, mm-hmm, cha-cha-cha. But when I listen, this kind of, the way of sound, I say this, and after that he put me Miles.
Mm-hmm.
When he put me Miles, was like revelation.
And Miles Davis, really, he is sort of the spirit guide for this new record. The story goes, it was a commission from a festival in Barcelona, to do a tribute to Kind of Blue, the classic Miles Davis record.
And for me was a little challenge, you know. I listened Miles for 6 months non-stop. Yeah, my wife and my kids say, Daddy, can we do another scene? It's only this. We're only seeing it with see and listen is this. I say, I need to find something inside of this, bring me to the way of creation. And one day, I remember it was late night. It was around 1 or 2 o'clock in the night. I remember I talked to my wife. I say, wow, I feel something. I say, oh, my, again? I say, well, I need to tell this to somebody. I go to the piano. I use the same bar of each solo. I pick up 4 notes together and create a melody.
So you're taking this kind of, you're taking these, it's almost like extracting DNA.
Yes, like this.
Okay. So you're taking the DNA out of Miles Davis's Kind of Blue and creating a whole new creature from it. We're speaking with Omar Sosa, the Cuban-born, Spanish-based pianist and composer. His album called Egun is kind of a tribute to Miles Davis's Kind of Blue. And not just Miles, but you mentioned all the great Cannonball Adderley and John Coltrane and Bill Evans. Now, the album is credited to you, Omar Sosa, and the Afroelectric Experience.
Yeah.
So this combination of the kind of the deep-rooted African traditions with modern electronics and production techniques, all of that comes together for you.
Yes. Well, actually, Miles, in one of the last, he was one of the pioneers of
Absolutely.
The electronic with Vicious Brew.
Right.
When everybody say, wow, dude, Miles was ahead.
Right. In fact, later on in the show, we'll have a little bit of a debate. Ashley Kahn, who I think will be taking the side of Kind of Blue versus Bitches Brew, which is the more important land. Of course, they're both important landmark recordings, but that's coming up later on Soundcheck today. We're speaking with Omar Sosa about the album called Egun. Now, what about the interludes on this record? They serve a specific purpose. They're very short, right?
Well, you know, in the beginning, the idea was to have a complete transcribed song based on Bill Evans' solo in Blue and Green.
Okay.
But the best way for me to say thank you to Bill Evans is play just what he did in the way he arranged the horns in Kind of Blue.
So this is a tribute to the pianist,
to Bill Evans.
Bill Evans. From my guest, Omar Sosa, and this is from the album called Egun. That is just one of the interludes. There are six of them on the album Egun by Omar Sosa and the Afroelectric Experience. As we mentioned, the album began as a kind of a tribute to Miles Davis's record Kind of Blue and ended up being a tribute to several of these Egun, these spirit guides, including the pianist Bill Evans, who of course was associated with Miles so closely for so long. And Omar Sosa is doing a couple of gigs here in the metropolitan area with the trumpeter Paolo Fresu, great Italian trumpeter who's been on the scene for many years. Thursday through Sunday, through January 27th at the Blue Note, and then Friday, February 1st at the South Orange Performing Arts Center in New Jersey. Omar's here with us performing on Soundcheck today. You want to play another piece from the new record?
Okay, we want to play a piece called Alma from the last record. Called Alma.
Called Alma, which means soul or spirit. And once again, this is Omar Sosa taking his place at our piano and performing live on Soundcheck. Once again, Omar Sosa, Cuban-born and now Spanish-based pianist and composer. And that is a live performance of Alma, which is the title track from a record from, that would be, what, 2010, 2011? The most recent recording is Egun with Omar Sosa and the Afroelectric Experience. And then there's the record you did with Paulo Freixo, which is a really beautiful recording. That's Alma. Performing with Paulo Freixo through Sunday night at the Blue Note, and then Friday, February 1st, at the South Orange Performing Arts Center in New Jersey. So these days you're living in Spain, on your little island off the coast, actually.
Well, you know, I'm back to Barcelona because in the end was kind of complex, you know, it's in the airplanes and
so you're back on the mainland.
The main company.
So what is the jazz scene like in Barcelona, specifically Spain in general now?
Well, you know, everybody know what happened in Europe, especially in Spain, Portugal, Greece, and Italy. But you know, the jazz scene is still, I need to say, it's still alive. You know, every November, we have this amazing festival, and even with this kind of big crisis,
even with the economics,
they are still fighting to get the festival alive. It's not easy. I need to say it's not easy, but it's what it is. You know, we need to keep and do what we need to do. Mm-hmm. Is play music and figure out a way to keep the music, the live music, alive.
Well, you've been doing it for a very long time on several continents. Omar Sosa, always great to have you with us on Soundcheck. Thank you,
Jonas. Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. And well, it's a nice day. Even if it's cold outside, but it's sunny. It's important.
Omar Sosa's recent recording is Egun, and then there's the album Alma, which he did with Paulo Freixo, and you're listening to Soundcheck. So now we know that Omar Sosa likes kinda blue, but maybe you prefer the Miles Davis fusion masterpiece, Bitches Brew. Coming up, two jazz critics duke it out, well, not literally, in a Soundcheck smackdown.
Conjunction, junction, what's your function?
Hooking up two boxcars and making them run right.
Next week, we'll be talking with Bob Durow, musician and composer behind the groundbreaking educational series Schoolhouse Rock. If you grew up with it, we want to know, do you still use the lessons you learned from Schoolhouse Rock in everyday life? Leave us a message, 1-866-939-1612, or email us, soundcheck@wnyc.org. That's 1-866-939-1612. To tell us why Schoolhouse Rock stuck with you after all these years. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. A moment ago, we heard pianist Omar Sosa tell us that his latest project was deeply inspired by this 1959 Miles Davis record, Kind of Blue. That makes Omar the latest in a very, very long line of artists who have paid homage to this jazz masterpiece. In fact, the album's influence is so vast that if Miles Davis had stopped there, he'd still be a legend. But he didn't. He kept going. And in 1970, jaws dropped when he released the jazz rock fusion album, Bitches Brew. Now, both are inarguably iconic records, but fans remain divided over which album has been the most influential. Is it the majesty and classic sound of Kind of Blue, or the electric fusion of Bitches Brew? Today, we're going to revisit a debate that we'd staged back in 2010. Now, this is a rebroadcast, so sorry, that means you cannot call in, but we think you're still going to enjoy Blue versus Brew in another
Soundcheck Smackdown.
And we are joined on the line by music writer Ashley Kahn, whose books include Kind of Blue, The Making of the Miles Davis Masterpiece. I think we can all guess which side of the debate he'll be on. Hi, Ashley.
Hey, John. How are you?
Good. And joining us to defend the honor of Bitches Brew is Will Lehman, writer, contributor to NPR, and a jazz critic for Pop Matters and others. Will, welcome back to the show.
Great to be in the ring, John.
All right, so we've got Blue and Brew, Kind of Blue, Bitches Brew, both influential, but Ashley, why is Kind of Blue the more influential of the two, if indeed that is where you're going to come down on the argument?
That is absolutely where I'm going to come down. I mean, there's no question, I think, that Kind of Blue hits a sort of timeless chord with most people. It remains the doorway to jazz for mainstream, you know, mm-hmm. for people who have yet to discover improvised music and the wonderful world of jazz. If people do have one jazz album, more often than not, it is Kind of Blue, and that's because of its accessibility, its romantic aura, etc.
Will, it certainly is accessible and romantic, but why do you think Bitches Brew is actually more influential?
Well, I think that the accessibility of Kind of Blue, I mix the titles up all the time, is what in 2010 becomes the problem, which is that if you're having a Sunday brunch at your house and you're going to invite people over who might not like jazz, you bet Kind of Blue goes in the CD player.
Mm-hmm.
But it's almost gotten lost now in the collective musical wallpaper of our culture. You could hear it on a car ad. And I think that the power of the album, while indisputable, is really been sapped. And in 2010, I vote Bitches Brew because it's still got fresh material that musicians are chewing on.
So are you saying that Kind of Blue was a musical dead end of sorts?
Well, I think it was a bit of a musical dead end for Miles. He didn't explore the modal approach all that much in the 10 years following. You could almost argue that Bitches Brew was one of the most modal things he did subsequent to Kind of Blue. But I think that the problem is that so many students learning how to play jazz learned every composition off of Kind of Blue and played it on every, you know, record that they made earlier in their career, that, you know, hearing somebody explore Freddie the Freeloader has become sort of like amateur hour in jazz.
Yeah, but we don't want to, like, you know, sort of blame Miles and his record for what other people did after it. Otherwise, Ashley, Bitches Brew would be in a whole lot of trouble, wouldn't it, because of the jazz rock thing that came after.
Absolutely, and we'd be blaming Jimi Hendrix also for a lot of bad stuff that happened afterwards. No, I mean, listen, Kind of Blue exists in a timeless fashion that I think is not in any way diffused by its popularity. So I would totally disagree with what what do we call him? My competitor?
Your opponent?
My opponent just said. But I mean, with all respect, I mean, I love Bitches Brew as well. But Kind of Blue is the type of thing that is not pegged to 1959. It is timeless. And Bitches Brew still, you know, sounds like it's of a time, of a certain moment.
Let's actually give people a chance to hear what those times and those moments sound like. Here's a little clip, famous bit of music from the 1959 Miles Davis, So What? That beautiful rolling bass line on So What from Miles Davis's Kind of Blue, a very different bass line in the title track of the 1970 Miles record, Bitches Brew. Debating Miles Davis, Kind of Blue or Bitches Brew, both of them albums that really changed the course of jazz. Both Ashley Kahn, who's defending Kind of Blue, and Will Lehman, who's defending Bitches Brew, are joining us on the line, each of them knee-deep in researching Miles for their own writings and taking some time to serve as gladiators in this week's Soundcheck Smackdown. Ashley, let's talk a little bit about how these records were received. I mean, Bitches Brew might or might not have been Miles's Dylan moment, you know, when Dylan went electric. How was Kind of Blue originally received?
It was. It came across as another popular album within an incredible run of popular albums for Miles. He was on Columbia Records, which was a mainstream label, so he was being pushed not as a jazz artist, but as a musician, as an artist on the level of a Bob Dylan or a Johnny Cash or a Doris Day or a Tony Bennett, all of whom were on Columbia at the same time, too. So if you think of Sketches of Spain and Porgy and Bess and Milestones, all great albums, this was just another step along the way, and it sold very respectfully, but it wasn't the sort of blast out of nowhere that the 100,000 copies that sold of Bitches Brew was in 69, in 70, rather.
In 1970, yeah. So Will, I mean, for all that we do hear of people raising eyebrows and ripping their hair out over what Miles was doing to jazz by amplifying it and adding all these rock effects, it did sell 100,000 copies. So what was that reception like?
Well, I think that it sold a lot of copies to young people who were still interested in jazz if jazz could just be made relevant to their lives. And with the electric instruments, with a very interesting album cover that featured a very different kind of art than the typical jazz album of the 50s or 60s, I think that Bitches Brew suggested that Miles Davis was making music that still had something to do with the culture in 1970 in a way that most jazz artists who were still playing swinging straight-ahead jazz were not. I think a lot of the people who bought Bitches Brew in 1970, or I think I bought it in 1975 because I was a little too young to buy it in 70, were actually a bit shocked when we heard the music itself and heard how atonal a lot of it was, that it had electric guitars and a backbeat, but it also was very complex, and it was a more revolutionary act, I think, than Kind of Blue in the end. Kind of Blue was a kind of consolidation album that put together a lot of modal and interesting ideas in jazz, whereas Kind of Blue really did knock people back.
You mean Bitches Brew did?
Bitches Brew, I'm sorry.
Was Bitches Brew Miles Davis's Judas moment, you know, the famous cry against Bob Dylan when he was performing in England and someone yelled Judas because he had dared to plug in his folk guitar?
Well, there were definitely critics who said that was the case. I think it's not entirely true that he just decided to sell a bunch of records. He'd been experimenting with electric instruments for a couple of years before that, and he'd been experimenting with some different kinds of rhythms. But Bitches Brew, it felt like that moment. I think, in fact, he'd been building toward it.
So, Ashley, what about the idea that Bitches Brew is this revolutionary moment and Kind of Blue is just sort of a summation of things that Miles had been working on for a while? That doesn't sound to me like, you know, an album that changed the course of music history.
Well, the thing with Miles is the effect that he had with Kind of Blue was felt years later. And there is that whole idea of, especially if you focus just on the modal aspect, the idea of not moving from chord to chord, but slowing down the harmonic movement of the music, which is much like classical music, that it sees its flowering with Bitches Brew 10 years later, because as Will pointed out, and I'm in total agreement, that was a very modal album as well. But I think the point here is that in both cases, you have what Miles was typically doing was a sort of hybrid approach to jazz, bringing in influences from outside of mainstream jazz to affect what he was doing in both cases. With Kind of Blue, it was classical music. It was trying to marry that idea with the swing, the propulsion of jazz, and he did it in a way that I think blended together in a very organic fashion that was successful and, I hate to keep saying it, but timeless. Whereas Bitches Brew, for all of its impact and the sales that it got in 1970, still comes across a little bit like a pastiche. In other words, the elements that he was trying to mix together, the funk rhythms, the electric rock, you know, aspects, and jazz, still are like layers that haven't quite blended.
Is Bitches Brew sounding a little dated? Does it sound like 1970 in a way that Kind of Blue does not sound like 59?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Well,
John, I think the problem is that when I listen to Kind of Blue today, I love it, love it, love it. No question about that. But what I hear is classic mid-century jazz. When I listen to Bitches Brew today, I hear a lot of the music by people like Robert Glasper, Vijay Iyer, Steve Coleman, Wadada Leo Smith, music that was made yesterday or the day before yesterday or is going to be made tomorrow. I still hear Bitches Brew pulsing with what was to come, whereas I don't think there are too many exciting new jazz albums in 2010 that you're going to hear where you say, wow, Kind of Blue is really essential to that fresh work. Hmm. So to me, if anything, Bitches Brew is the one that still feels like today.
All right, Soundcheck listeners, time for you guys to weigh in. Mike is joining us on the line from Brooklyn. Mike, which do you go Blue or Brew? Which is the more influential record for you?
Bitches Brew, no doubt.
Why?
Just for all the same reason that the guy was just talking about. You know, all the music today, a lot of it going on in Brooklyn is all related to Bitches Brew. You know, the Bad Plus, Jim Black, Chris Lightcamp, Ben Maunder, all those guys, all that I think is related back to Bitches Brew. I
mean, how did you first come to the record?
I heard it when I was in camp, and all the people in camp were into the Grateful Dead, and they were into Bitches Brew.
Really?
Yeah, it was sort of improvised kind of thing. I guess, don't ask me why, but it was, when I first heard it, I was blown away.
So from the Deadheads, you got your indoctrination into the sound of late Miles.
That's right. I mean, and I love Kind of Blue. It's obviously incredible, but, you know, what's happening right now with tape loops and how we recorded the album and John McLaughlin and Tony Williams and all that and Jack DeJohnette's playing on the album is just all related to what was happening in Bitches Brew, which I still think, you know, you can listen to it over and over again and just hear so many different things and the layers and the textures.
And there certainly are.
All the time.
You raise a good point, Mike. The looping, the textures, all the things that the later Miles Davis did because he had access to that technology. But let's see what some of the comments are looking like on the website. Joel Myers in the control room with some of the comments. Joel?
John, let me just say the phone lines right now. Mike, that caller that we just heard there is in good company. There are lots of Fusion fans on the phone lines, which means keytars and trumpets played through wah-wah pedals are in full effect. But it's not the same on the Soundcheck website. Nick from the Upper West Side writes this: Kind of Blue, no contest. The mood, the evocative quality, the nocturnal universe of it, nothing equals it. Nobody sits with a martini in a dimly lit room pondering their life while listening to Bitches Brew. One of the most deeply beautiful albums ever made is Kind of Blue. Bitches Brew, while interesting, is not beautiful. It just doesn't connect with deeper emotions. But Rick from the Bronx has something else to say. He says, if the title is most influential, then the winner is Bitches Brew by a knockout. However, when one considers the horror of jazz fusion that followed Bitches Brew, one would have to consider it a hollow victory.
Yeah, now that goes back to that whole, you know, the sins of the father being visited upon the son thing. You know, it's like, I mean, Will, what do you make of the kind of the legacy? I mean, if you're defending Bitches Brew as this really influential record, you know, a lot of what came after was in retrospect, not so great.
I think that what came immediately after Bitches Brew, and it was all tied back to Bitches Brew, you know, Chick Corea's Return to Forever group, a lot of what Weather Report did, really sounds very little like Bitches Brew, and I think was, I don't want to accuse these musicians of just trying to make money. I think their music was quite sincere, but Bitches Brew is a much more complex, ambiguous, and harmonically free canvas than what fusion would become in the mid to late 70s, and certainly what smooth jazz would become a decade later. I think the relevant antecedents for Bitches Brew is more of the music being made today, which combines a tremendous number of different styles, including funk and rock and free jazz, into something that is booming, as the previous caller said, in places like, you know, Brooklyn today, or really all over the world.
Ashley Kahn, what about the idea that all these bands out there today, 40 years after the release of Bitches Brew, that you can still hear lingering echoes of that? Are there bands in 2010 where you can say the same thing about Kinda Blue, now 51 years old?
Absolutely. I mean, the thing is that Kinda Blue was sort of an apex of this mainstream post-bop acoustic jazz tradition that hit its, you know, crest in the late 50s, early 60s. Electric jazz and those other influences were right around the corner, but if you were going to choose like an ultimate statement for that style of jazz at that late 50s, early 60s, you know, post-bop moment, Kinda Blue would be it. And when you think about mainstream jazz that you go to a nightclub to hear, the vast majority, and I'm not saying numbers rule, but if you're going to hear good jazz, jazz that hits some sort of emotional veracity that really reaches you and you really feel it, the vast majority of bands out there are not experimenting in the way that Bitches Brew would have influenced. And for all the respect that I have for VJ and for the Bad Plus and for anything that Ethan Iverson touches, for God's sakes, I mean, I love it. But
Ethan being he's the pianist in the Bad Plus, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's a minority. The vast majority of mainstream jazz artists out there that are playing in the tradition are playing what would be called modern jazz, modern acoustic jazz, of which Kinda Blue was, as I said, one of the crowning moments.
We are debating Kinda Blue and Bitches Brew, two defining moments for Miles Davis. Calls on the line, and back to the control room, producer Joel Meyer with more comments from the website. Joel.
John, a good follow-up comment from Eero in Brooklyn. He's responding to Nick's comment earlier and just has this to say, hey, people do sit with a joint in a dimly lit room pondering the universe while listening to Bitches Brew. And for my money, it's plenty beautiful. Lots of fans of Kinda Blue turning out on the website. We're not seeing them on the phone so much, but definitely on WNYC.org/soundcheck. Ryan from Virginia writes, Kind of Blue shows up at the top of everyone's best jazz albums list for a reason. The atmosphere, the interaction, even the story behind the record all make it one of the most fascinating records of the era. Reggie from Brooklyn agrees as well. He writes, Kind of Blue and Bitches Brew are very different. Brew is amazing but dated. You can't listen to it without thinking of the late 60s and early 70s. Blue, as your guest mentioned, seems timeless.
Well, let's hear a little bit of that timeless sound from 1959. This is Miles Davis from the album Kinda Blue. Miles Davis from the 59 album Kinda Blue, pitted in our soundcheck smackdown this week against the genre-bending effort from 1970 by Miles called Bitches Brew. And Julietta is joining us on the line from Mount Kisco, New York. Julietta, which side of the debate are you going to occupy?
Oh, hands down, Kinda Blue. I hated Bitches Brew when it came out.
Why?
It just was noisy and jangly and reminded me of everything I hated.
And
rock and roll.
Kind of Blue, when did you come to that album?
Kind of Blue in the late 60s, and just, oh, it's like the skies opened up. It changed my life. Maybe because...
But Julietta, we're having a little trouble getting you on the line there from Mount Kisco, but enough to hear that Julietta loved Kinda Blue, hated Bitches Brew. Ashley, you're laughing. How common was that for people to say, what is Miles thinking?
I only chuckle because it's great to get a female perspective, because I think that really needs to be represented. And I totally agree with the gentleman who wrote in about how Bitches Brew makes you, you know, light up a joint, sit there in the dark room. But, you know, it all depends what you want to do in the dark, you know, because there's this aphrodisiacal quality, again, that ties in with the timeless thing, that people still hear over 50 years later. And that's incredible.
In Kinda Blue.
And when, you know, when you think about influence, there are many ways of measuring influence. It's not just the other music makers who are influenced. It's a whole world of listeners out there. And if they're hearing what Miles meant to put down in 59, 50 years later still, I think that, you know, I'm sorry, then it wins, hands down.
Well, it's been interesting to see how many people have been on Will Lehman's side of the debate joining us on the line. We don't think it's such a hands-down affair. Will Lehman's been with us supporting Bitches Brew. Ashley Kahn with us on the line supporting Some Kind of Blue. The two great Miles Davis records with lots of fans lined up on either side of the divide. Ashley, Will, thank you both for being with us for our Soundcheck Smackdown this week.
It's been a pleasure, John, sir. Thank you.
That's going to do it for Soundcheck today. Join us on Monday for a conversation with the Scottish crime writer Ian Rankin. He's best known for his series of books starring Detective Inspector Rebus, many of them named after rock records. Music plays a big role in the series, and Ian Rankin will join us to talk about music on and off the page. That's Monday at 9. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.